This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest, Dr. Bart Fisher, co-director of the Agriculture Food Policy Center at Texas A&M and College Station. We talk farm bill. We talk trade. We talk the current state of the ag economy. That's all coming up in just a moment. Senator Pete Ricketts at an event at the Nebraska State Fair on why rural areas should stay involved.
Well, agriculture is the heart and soul of what we do here in Nebraska, right? It drives our economy. It's one in four jobs in our state. And it's impacted by all these things we're talking about, whether it's trade or regulation. And this is going to impact Nebraska directly if we don't have a strong agricultural economy. So that's why it was important to really let people know why they need to get involved, that we need to have good policies on this so that we can continue to have a strong economy that creates the jobs for our families.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, joined today by Dr. Bart Fisher. Bart is co-director of the Agricultural Food Policy Center at Texas A&M in College Station. Dr. Fisher, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Tony, it's great to be with you today.
All right. I thought the first question I'd have for you is, are you missing your time on Capitol Hill with the House Ag Committee in this time when they're working to get a farm bill across the finish line? Because you've been there and done that.
In a word, no. You know, there are certainly parts of it I miss. I certainly miss working with the team up there every day. We had some great people that worked on committee. You know, Washington, D.C. gets a bad rap, but the reality is you've got some good folks, particularly in ag, who are working there, who are familiar with the issues, who are passionate about the work they do. And so they may get a bad rap, but you actually got some really great folks. So I do miss working with them. I do not miss the chaos of Washington, D.C. or 18 hours a day or dysfunction. I don't miss any of that part. But fortunately, I still get to be pretty plugged in. Our center does a lot of work with House and Senate Ag Committees. And so I get to be involved in the process without having to live through it every single day.
I'm so glad you went that direction, because for those who just watch and see the dysfunction that happens, it can be easy to blame a member of Congress or just blame the entire vehicle, if you will. But that's really not the case. There's a lot of things that have to happen to even get a bill to the floor, right?
Absolutely right. And don't get me wrong, there is a tremendous amount of dysfunction in that place, and so I don't want to gloss over that or discount it. Right, there's a lot. There's a lot that doesn't seem to be working in our country right now. And I teach 100 or about 250 undergraduates every spring in ag and food policy, and we spend a lot of time focusing on that very thing. But, you know, I still, in spite of all the dysfunction and the headaches, you know, I still argue we've got the best form of government in the world. But it is messy, and it does take, participation. And so it's easy to get cynical in the process. But, you know, the only other substitute, I certainly wouldn't want to hand it over to one person in charge of everything, right? And so, you know, our system of government with co-equal branches of government, it results in a lot of gridlock, but part of that's by design. And so a lot of it is just finding your way to work, you know, finding your way through that, working through it. I think the challenge is that the work that Congress does and that the executive branch does is incredibly important, and it does affect people out on the ground every day. And so it is important, you know, despite all of that dysfunction and chaos, it's important that they find their way through it and get it done, because the work that they do does impact growers out on the ground directly.
You have teed this up perfectly, because as you're describing that, I was just pulling out the idea of Congress and inserting the idea of farmers and those in production ag who are dealing with a lot of the same uncertainty that's out there, and some of the gridlock, the markets, and maybe some trade issues as well. But at the end of the day, we have to rely on those in ag to continue to work through it. But there's no glossing over this. Times are really tough, aren't they?
Absolutely, they're tough, and they're getting tougher. You know, admittedly, we're in silly season right now, right in the middle of a presidential election cycle. And I thought all of the chatter last year about the speaker, you know, everything going on in the House of replacing the speaker and the speaker's race, I thought that was sort of the pinnacle of the craziness. And then enter this presidential election cycle and what's transpired over the last month, right? So there's a lot of background noise that's going on right now. But, you know, behind the scenes of all that background noise, too, is a farm economy that's not improving, right? You have commodity prices trending down, you know, costs that are sticky, which we know happens in agriculture. And so that cost price squeeze continues to grow. And it grows against the backdrop of us being in an extension of the 2018 farm bill. And so there's a lot of, you know, potential improvements on the horizon in a new farm bill, but that's all at this point. You know, that's nothing that a grower can take to the bank because Congress has yet to finish that work. And, you know, and against that same political backdrop right now, you know, it's hard for me not to chuckle when I hear about inflation stabilizing, you know, and, you know, 2% year over year inflation or, you know, close to it that we ended up, in August. Well, that's great that inflation is slowing, but when you look at where it's gone over the last 5 years, that's very little comfort, right? And growers, are in the middle, still in the middle of navigating all of that, and they're doing that against this prospect of prices that are significantly declining. So whether it's old crop that you're figuring out how to market, or whether you're starting to look at how you're going to cash flow into the new year, there's a whole lot of alarm bells on the horizon right now.
Okay, so at this point, would take a not even a minor miracle, probably a major miracle, more than an act of Congress to get a farm bill across the finish line. So, and just a few days to get anything done. Does it look like we're going to have to push this into 25?
Well, interestingly enough, that's exactly what it would take, right? It would take an act of Congress. That's exactly what we need to happen. It is Congress acting. And so, yeah, I think that there's the prospect of getting something done in September. I think it's probably pretty unlikely, but it is possible, right? And, a big question mark is what, if anything, Congress will do on disasters and supplemental funding as they figure out how they're going to fund the government into the next fiscal year as well. And so you've got a farm bill that a farm bill could move. It could also move alongside a disaster package or an appropriations spending package as well. And so I think Congress is trying to sort all of those things out right now. It won't surprise me at all if this conversation doesn't slip until after the election, right? The election is consuming everything between now and November. And so I think it certainly could slip into November. But after that, during the lame duck, it presents another opportunity for getting a bill done. You know, one point we've been discussing, too, though, is that even if you get the new farm bill finished, it kicks in for the crop year 2025, where assistance really doesn't go out the door until October of 26. And just given the pain in the countryside right now, even if they get a new farm bill done, I think unlike last year, the time is right for doing another ad hoc package this fall. I think when members are home over October campaigning, they're going to hear a lot in the countryside about the pressure that growers are facing and the fact that, you know, we need to get this new farm bill done. But even if we get it done, we're still going to be facing a giant hole for the 2024 crop year. And so I think there's probably going to be discussion about a bridge that kind of gets you from the farm bill extension into that new farm bill, just given where prices are trending right now.
We're approaching an 8-year anniversary of when China decided we needed some trade issues. And it really started with the sorghum industry of all things. But I bring that up because it's hard to identify maybe what the trade strategy has been over the past few years. One thing we haven't heard much out of at all is World Trade Organization. And there's been quite a few changes over the last 8 years with WTO. When you sit down and start thinking about WTO and ag trade, where does that take you?
Oh, man, it takes me in a number of different directions. So we can spend the rest of the day talking about it. You know, I mean, one of the first, you know, gut reactions I get when I talk to growers is who cares what the WTO thinks, right? I mean, and that's a very popular perspective out there. I mean, it admittedly, I mean, politics in general are trending in a more populist direction. And so, you know, increasingly, you know, I hear from folks that, you know, we don't want to worry, you know, we're going to worry about our own country first. And that's all well and good until you focus on the fact, you know, that a third of the farm income in this country comes from crops that we export. You know, over 95% of the stomachs on planet Earth reside outside of our borders. And so U.S. agriculture has long relied on exports. And with that said, you know, I'm under no illusions that the WTO has worked incredibly well, right? I mean, we got to be on the receiving end of the dispute settlement process for over a decade on the cotton case. And admittedly, we had some successes there, too. But that process is sort of ground to a halt. The dispute settlement process is largely ground to a halt. And so I think we're at this point in time where, you know, folks are looking at inwardly frustrated over how, you know, the international trade conversation has gone. And that's all understandable. But I, you know, in my view of the world, we've got to get back to having those conversations, and that even for agriculture in our country, you know, we can't just be looking internally. We've got to be looking at, you know, at export opportunities. And certainly we're doing that on the market promotion side, right? Congress is contemplating doubling the funding that we put, you know, towards programs like MAP and FMD. But, you know, for the bodies that set the global, you know, the global trade rules, I think those have got to be functioning as well. In part because, I mean, trade, you know, enforcement is one of the biggest, you know, biggest pieces of that. And I think you largely had seen folks growing frustrated at the WTO where the U.S. would come into compliance. But what were they doing about the rest of the world? And, you know, we took right before all of this imploded, the United States had taken a case against China in the WTO over the fact that they had provided over $100 billion in subsidies to three crops in 1 year, which just dwarfs what the United States had done. And so we had brought that case in the WTO under the Obama administration. The Trump administration ended up winning that case before things started kind of to collapse. And so my hope is that we can get back to some of those conversations because I think, you know, for the good of agriculture, in feeding people around the world, it makes sense to have very, you know, a very solid, robust trade. And I think what's been missing, though, is a balance there that involves significantly more trade enforcement that made sure, you know, every country was kind of being treated equitably.
Again, the co-director of the Agriculture Food Policy Center at Texas A&M, Dr. Bart Fisher. I'm Tony St. James, and this is the Agribusiness Report.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
Want to turn your truck into the ultimate workhorse or off-road beast? The possibilities are endless when you visit Rascal Supply Co. in Lubbock. Rascal has truck accessories, truck beds, bumpers, bed covers, lift kits, toolboxes, leveling kits, and so much more. Come see us at 10307 North U.S. Highway 87 or call 806-300-8007 for Rascal Supply.
This is the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest today, Dr. Bart Fisher with the Agriculture Food Policy Center.
Attention, High Plains landowners. The Sandhill Area Research Association proudly presents Your Legacy is Tomorrow's Water. We're joining forces with partners across Texas to restore 50 Playa Lakes, crucial for recharging the Ogallala Aquifer and supporting our unique wildlife. Be a part of this transformative initiative. Visit PlayasWorkForTexans.com for more details. Let's secure our water legacy together.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton, The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Special guest Bart Fisher with Texas A&M.
Sorghum farmers, it's your time to shine. The 2024 National Sorghum Producers Yield Contest is open for entries. Compete in divisions like irrigated, dryland no-till, dryland tillage, and food grade. No matter where you farm, east or west, let's yield greatness together. Contest rules and entry forms are online at sorghumgrowers.com/yieldcontest. Enter by November 26 and harvest the win.
In this heat, you're concerned about both the health of your animals and their performance. Strobel Super Shades can reduce the dangerous ground temperatures 30 degrees or more. Strobel Super Shades, the best-built cattle shades in the industry, available in 40 by 40 with 1,600 square feet of shade or 20 by 20, proven to protect your cattle and increase your gains. Go to StrobelShades.com for more. StrobelShades.com. It's the Agribusiness Report.
USDA economists are forecasting grocery store food prices this year to end up only 1.2% higher than 2023. And for next year, shoppers could see food price hikes
slightly lower than what we're predicting for food price increases in 2024.
USDA economist Megan Schweitzer. So the forecast for grocery store food price inflation this year is 1.2%.
And 1.1% in 2025.
In fact, Megan says it's possible food prices next year could end up falling below this year's level. It has happened before.
In both 2016 and 2017, food at home prices actually dropped. In 2016 by 1.3%, and in 2017 they dropped by 0.2%.
So stay tuned. The food price story next year could be a good one, barring any unexpected shocks to the system.
Hopefully not too many things that nobody's expecting come along.
Gary Crawford, Washington.